You're listening to WILL, Illinois Public Media. I'm Sean Powers. For the next hour, we're going to explore the issue of childhood hunger. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, last year, nearly 660,000 Illinois children lived in poverty. That's up from 600,000 in 2010. On September 18th, the Eastern Illinois Food Bank hosted the 6th Annual Hunger Symposium at Provena Covenant Medical Center in Urbana. We'll present excerpts from that event. We start with Larry Joseph, who's the director of the group Voices for Illinois Children. He talks about trends of childhood poverty.
There are 3 million kids in Illinois, and about 600,000 of them live in households with incomes below the federal poverty level. So the child poverty rate for the most recent year that we have, 2010, is 19.4%. The poverty rate for the population as a whole in Illinois is 13.6%. How do we define poverty? Official federal poverty rates are determined by poverty thresholds based on income level and household size. So, for example, for a married couple with two kids in 2010, the poverty threshold was about $22,800. For a single parent with two kids, it was about a little over $18,000. By contrast, the median income for families with children in Illinois was about $62,000. For a family of four, that's less than a third of the statewide median. In the last half of the 1990s, child poverty rates, both nationwide and Illinois, fell significantly, from about 20% in the mid-1990s to about 15% by the end of the decade. Since then, there has been a steady increase, so that even though the recession has had a huge impact on poverty rates, child poverty in Illinois was and nationwide as well was already creeping up during the early part of the decade as a result of sluggish economic growth. There was, as you can see, a spike as a result of the recession. So between 2000 and 2008, it goes from about 15% to 17%. But then between 2008 and 2010, it jumps up two more percentage points. Nearly all of the gains from the economic growth of the 1990s are gone. Now, while the poverty rate for children overall is a little over 19%. It varies by subgroups. One is age. Young children under the age of 6, have the highest poverty rates, almost 22% in 2009-2010. That's a two-year average. Different racial and ethnic groups have very different poverty rates. For both black children and Latino children, the child poverty rates are somewhat lower in Illinois than in the nation as a whole. Among black children, it's somewhat higher than the nation as a whole, but they're not radically different. Another major contrast is if we look at different kinds of households. This slide shows family poverty rates rather than child poverty rates, meaning it's the percentage of families of a certain type that are below poverty rather than the percentage of children. Among all families with children, about 16% were below poverty level in 2009-2010. But there's a huge difference between married couple households, where only about 7% are in poverty, and single mother households, where the poverty rate is almost 40%. Here's some data on the 14 counties in the service area of the Eastern Illinois food bank. There were about 23,000 kids living in poverty in the 14 counties. About 59% of those live in just two counties, Champaign and Vermilion. For the 14 counties as a whole, the child poverty rate is 21%. Vermilion County has by far the highest child poverty rate, 31%, one of the highest poverty rates of any county in the state, actually the highest of any of the of the 20 largest counties. Vermilion County is distinctive not only in terms of its high poverty rate, but in the increase in child poverty over the last decade. If you look first at Champaign, you see a pattern that is typical of the other counties in this region and in many other parts of the state. So between 2000 and 2005, it goes up a couple percentage points. In between 2005 and 2010, it goes up another couple of points. In Vermilion County, it goes up by 8 percentage points in the first half of decades, from 19% to 27%, and then yet another 4 percentage points. What's going on here? Well, Vermilion County is, which is where Danville is one of the areas of the state that has lost a huge amount of manufacturing jobs in the last decade. It's one of it's an older, small industrial city that has had very hard economic times well before the recession. And you see this in a couple of other counties in other parts in Illinois. In Macon County, the Decatur area, in Winnebago County, the Rockford area. You see a very, very similar pattern. Fortunately, there are in fact some public programs that are very effective in alleviating child poverty. The most effective programs in this regard are the Federal Earned Income Tax Credit, the EITC, and SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. So in 2009-2010, the EITC, the federal EITC, moved 120,000 kids above poverty level. What that means is that if you count the EITC benefits that the family gets as part of their income, 120,000 kids are moved above poverty level. For SNAP, 63,000 Illinois kids were moved above poverty level. By contrast, TANF cash benefits, which this is temporary assistance for needy families, which is a cash assistance program and isn't in fact counted in the official poverty rate, moved only 9,000 Illinois children above poverty level. Okay. So there are important federal programs, the EITC and SNAP in particular, that are quite effective in moving kids above poverty level. The last slide looks at what we might expect in the near future regarding child poverty in this case, nationwide. These are projections from the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., based on an analysis of patterns in previous recessions. And what we learned from previous recessions is that there's a time lag between economic recovery and recovery from increased poverty rates in general and child poverty rates in particular. And so we can expect that the child poverty rate is going to continue to increase even as the economy recovers. It's projected to continue increasing and peaking nationwide at almost 24% in 2014 before it starts going down again. Part of the reason for this is that if you look at previous recessions, the length of time for recovery of poverty rates was shorter because the recessions themselves were shorter. This has been a prolonged recession, and as a result, even as unemployment goes down, child poverty rates are likely to remain high.
That was Larry Joseph, who's the director of the group Voices for Illinois Children. Next to speak is Dawn Malchiori with the Illinois Commission to End Hunger and the No Kid Hungry campaign. She talks about food insecurity and ways to address it at home, in the schools, and in the community.
So here in Illinois, 22%, about 684,000 children, are food insecure. And when we talk about food insecurity, it's really a measure to determine whether they have access to a healthy and nutritious meal on a consistent basis. So many times what you'll find is there'll be periods of time within a month, maybe a week or two, while they have their SNAP benefits, but then the end of the month, SNAP benefits are gone, they can no longer visit a pantry. That's where the food insecurity, that's where a parent is making one meal stretch for the entire day. Vermilion County has about a 25.7% food insecurity rate for children. Clay County, again, 25%. But pretty much all of the service area, which Eastern Illinois is in, has between 18 and 25% children that are food insecure. Collectively, when we think about this food insecurity rate, so what does it mean? How do we quantify it? So really we're talking, and if any of you are familiar with the Feeding America's Hunger Study, we really try to break it down into missing meals. So in the state of Illinois, it's about 81 missing meals or 220,000 missing meals per day for the children in Illinois. Why it matters. I'm sure all of you are here because you know it matters. But just to reinforce the health consequences, and especially the younger the child, from prenatal to three, when they're experiencing rapid growth of their brain, lack of nutritious foods on a consistent basis will stunt some development. As they get older, chronic ear infections, stomach aches, headaches. When you start to see the school-age children, social-emotional well-being, what teachers are saying and principals are saying is that they're seeing higher levels of behavioral issues due to hunger. They're seeing kids that are a little bit more aggressive and anxious, especially in the teen years, where it manifests itself in different ways, that the not knowing where food is going to be the next day, as well as seeing their younger siblings, their parents struggling, has a real effect on teenagers and their behavior and how they're in school. There's also quite a bit of research now coming out about academic achievement and hunger. So when looking at food insecurity by income, again, you know, nothing that should shock anyone after Larry's presentation talking about hunger. But what we're looking at is those that are food insecure and eligible for nutrition assistance. So if you see in that yellow, they're likely eligible for nutrition assistance, so their incomes are below 185%. What those are school breakfast, school lunch, after school, and summer feeding. So these are families that reach their either free or reduced price, and reduced price means about 30 cents for a breakfast or lunch. So about 66% of food insecure children fall into that. You'll see that 34%. And that's very striking and very scary because those are ineligible for nutrition assistance. Those are children that are paid in the classroom. Those are those that are relying on food pantries and the food bank for nutrition. So when you look at it, the estimate for those at 34%, 232,000 children. Then we also have the unique characteristics of children who are eligible but not participating in programming. So when you look at summer food we have 452,000 children who are likely eligible, but only about 109 are actually participating. In our state, it's about 14.9% participation rates of people who are likely eligible are actually participating in the summer food program. When you go over to breakfast, same thing happens with breakfast. We're at about 39.3%. So we have about another 150,000 kids that are actually eligible for breakfast that aren't receiving it. So that brings me to No Kid Hungry Illinois. So really the commission, when the Children and Families at Risk Committee looked at all of the research, all of the data that was happening here in Illinois as well as nationwide, they made a series of recommendations about how we have to increase participation in breakfast, in lunch, in summer feeding. All of those programs where we have dedicated funding lines due to federal nutrition programs, but yet kids weren't actually receiving those benefits. And one of the major recommendations that came out was to partner with Share Our Strength and develop a No Kid Hungry campaign here in Illinois. Share Our Strength, as we heard earlier, is a national anti-hunger organization. They have No Kid Hungry campaigns in 18 other states, ranging. We're really only the one in the Midwest. Michigan just actually got off the ground, but it looks fairly similar. And really the campaign's focus, much like our focus, is connecting kids who are eligible to the programs that are already out there. The first priority is our school breakfast, as we talked about. I think everybody understands what the school breakfast program, it came in the 1970s, kind of as an accompaniment to the National School Lunch Program, has to meet all of the federal requirements. There is reimbursement rate. Actually, here in Illinois, we actually have a school breakfast mandate. So any school in our state that has 40% or more children who are eligible for free or reduced-priced lunch have to provide a school breakfast. However, there is no kind of how does that breakfast have to come about. Many times it's in the cafeteria before school. And it has a whole host of issues that we'll talk about in a little bit. So what this is, one of the reasons why the No Kid Hungry wants to focus on school breakfast. Again, we talked 39.3% of kids are actually participating. This is kind of the breakdown as where we could get to. I would love to see that 100% participation. I'm also a realist. If we could just get to 60%, you can see where we're getting it in our meals. 80% would be fabulous. 100%, we would just rock here in Illinois. And this is the important key to everything, is leveraging those federal resources. As I said, school breakfast is a federal mandate, just like the National School Lunch Program. Each year, Illinois, because of our low participation rates, is leaving almost $39 million on the table. We're leaving it in Washington, D.C. It could come here to help feed our kids. We're leaving it there because our participation is so low. So as you see, with each growth, how much more, keep doubling that $38.4 million. These are dollars that schools just send in there, how many more kids are actually participating in the program. So how do we do it? How do we expand breakfast? There's some real key things. One of the best practices that actually exists in the state is called breakfast in the classroom. And how many people have heard of breakfast in the classroom or know their schools are doing it? Raise your hand. So what breakfast in the classroom is literally what it sounds like. They wheel little carts in, and usually it is a cold breakfast, can consist of like an English muffin, a whole grain English muffin, milk, juice, a piece of fruit, usually some kind of nut butters, things like that. Remember, it has to go along with federal standards, which are tightening, tightening, tightening. They can no longer have Pop-Tarts. It's wheeled in. The children take one if they want to eat breakfast that day in the classroom. They sit down. Teachers actually go through attendance, do announcements. They clean up, and they go on. There's a lot of pushback sometimes from teachers. So one of the things, and there should be enough on the back, I'll point out, is that there is Share Our Strength did a national teacher study. They do this every year where they actually go out and talk to about 1,200 teachers from across the country and talk about what they're seeing in hunger, and then, is the breakfast in the classroom that difficult to do? And overwhelmingly, as teachers get more and more familiar with it, they actually love it. And so there's one of those in the back there. If you go on their website, actually you can get the full about 40-page report, and you can see all the data. The other popular model is grab and go. And grab and go is really used more for the middle school or high school. And that actually, as they come in, there's a kiosk where kids can come and get their breakfast. They're checked off that they receive it, and then they can go anywhere in the school designates to eat. Some go in the classroom, library. It's popular in high schools where they use it to interact with friends and they eat in the hallway. However, the school wants to do it. And then second chance breakfast. And I think second chance breakfast, especially for rural areas where kids are getting on the bus at 6 a.m., and they have a bus ride for an hour, they might have eaten breakfast at home, but by the time they get to school and at that effort, they're starving. And so they need some just a little something to get them through. Again, it's also something that's really popular in high schools. So what is the No Kid Hungry doing to increase participation? We are geared towards a 5% increase in school breakfast every year. So we're doing a number of different things. First, we're doing breakfast summits. We've done a couple already in the state, and that's really geared towards school personnel, those that are actually dealing in food service, teachers, principals, to educate about what models exist and how you can increase participation. Most schools that go from a traditional cafeteria-style breakfast to a grab-and-go or to a breakfast in the classroom see their participation go from anywhere from 8% in the cafeteria to 70-80%. And they absolutely love it. So what we've been doing is connecting those that have established programs with those that don't, and trying to get them some peer-to-peer learning. The second is a state breakfast challenge. And again, you have some flyers, I think. I think I have some. We partnered with the Midwest Dairy Council and the State Board of Education, and we are doing a challenge to all schools in the state of Illinois to increase their participation. And we broke them down into tiers and to break it down into what their free and reduced price levels are, so we try to make it a little fair. We're going to look at the past, their first 6 months of the year's participation with the last 6 months of the year. And hopefully in March of 2013, we're going to be awarding the prizes to all of those schools that were the top performers in their categories. Maybe, hopefully, we'll have some schools from all of your areas. So we'll talk a little bit about what you can do to help them. There is grants to schools and districts. The No Kid Hungry campaign has grants, as well as Midwest Dairy has grants to actually help schools get over the hump. They range from $1,000 to $5,000, which actually the average grant that we've been getting is $2,000. That's all schools actually end up asking for that they need to implement a program. And next, we're doing outreach and awareness. So we've created, you can go on the No Kid Hungry website. There are toolkits. There's in English and Spanish. There's anything that a school might want to help them communicate with parents about what's happening, to communicate with their community. And then awareness sessions like coming out and speaking to all of you. Let's switch real quick. Now we're going to summer. And I'm sure this is something all of you are familiar with. One of the key things that at the No Kid Hungry campaign that we are really concerned about is kids that are receiving breakfast and lunch. When summer comes and school is closed, and if there's no school in session, where are these children eating? We know they're still hungry. Where are they going to go and eat? So there is a program called the Summer Feeding Service Program. And it's only available in areas where the school district has 50% or more of children that are eligible for free and reduced price lunch. But if you look in some of your highest need counties, you're automatically going to be there. And what happens is that anyone can be a sponsor. Any large nonprofit can be a sponsor through the state. And they can bring on sites and have meals for the summer. So the children can come in. Some have just open sites where kids drop in and get a meal, eat there, and then leave. Some do it as day camps. They run enrichment programs. There's a whole host of things they can do. And so our strategies are fairly similar to what they were in school breakfast. So a lot of marketing and materials. One of the things that we came up with, I know Eastern has had a lot of them, is for the first time kind of standard flyers for parents. One of the things we know is most parents don't even know this program exists. Once they find out, they become regular customers, but they just don't know it exists. So that's what we're really working on changing. So we've done a lot of outreach to families. There's a statewide hotline that they can call and find out where their nearest sites are. New this year, we did a website, which is summerfoodillinois.org. And they could go in and search by county or search by their zip code, and it pulled up every site that was in their area, along with a Google map. And then finally, which was really cool, is that we had a texting platform. So for the first time ever, a parent could text text food IL to 877-877. And the top three, they would put in their address, and the top three sites would come be texted back to them. And then it would link them back to the website if they want that. We actually found that it was actually something that teens kind of got into because it was a really anonymous thing. Teens 18 and under are eligible for the summer feeding program, so they don't need a parent to come in. They can just walk in and get a meal. So trying to figure out new mediums to reach the teen population is very difficult in the summer to reach, so thought this might work. In Chicago, we actually did a small pilot on going door-to-door in some very high-risk neighborhoods and talking to people about the program. And finally, grants. We were able to give out over $65,000 in grants throughout the state to help sites get off the ground, help them with personnel. And so far it looks like, despite a very, very hot summer, which we know was bringing down participation, it looks like our June numbers, there was quite a bit of an increase in the number of meals that were served this summer, so we're keeping our fingers crossed. So, after listening to me drone on, what can you do? And this is really the reason I came here, because I am it for the No Kid Hungry campaign. There's only so much I can do. Really what I need is for all of you to join in us and to help us. So the first thing would be, find out how your school is actually serving breakfast. Are they serving it in the cafeteria? If they are, why? Is their participation low? And those are the kind of things, if you know, you're interested in talking to them, you can see me later, or you can email me and I can help you and let you know what their rates are. Talk about breakfast. Hopefully you go to your neighbor or coworker tomorrow and you say, did you know the importance of school breakfast? Our moms were right. Nothing happens if you don't eat a good breakfast. Talk about summer meals. Find out if there were any summer meals in your area. Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs, the food pantry, food bank. There's a whole host of communities, churches. The faith community is very, very important and critical in the summer meals program because many of them run summer enrichment programs. Connect to your food bank and pantry. See what they're doing for summer and for school breakfast. And then finally, we hope you connect with the No Kid Hungry campaign.
That was Dawn Melchiori with the Illinois Commission to End Hunger and the No Kid Hungry campaign. To connect with the campaign, visit nokidhungry.org. Up next, we'll hear from Barbara Fees with the Family Resiliency Center located at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She starts off by assessing the backpack program, which provides a backpack full of food to elementary school children who are food insecure.
I have gotten to know really the face of childhood hunger in this community and how deeply it affects the families in our community. And what I want to share with you a bit is what we've learned about how the backpack program has positively affected many of the families that live right in our own neighborhoods. But also, what can we learn from this evaluation to better feed our children and for you to have conversations with your neighbors, with the people in the schools, with people that you talk with in your churches or in your neighborhoods where you shop about the importance of this issue, because you've seen the rising rates of poverty. This is not going away, and this is a serious, serious problem for our children. We heard very briefly that children who are raised without adequate sources of food are placed at increased risk for developing a host of health consequences. So they're more likely to be born low birth weight. They're more likely to develop problems with their immunity systems, okay, when they're infants. So they can't fight off infections very well. They're at greater increase for birth defects. They're more likely to develop anemia when they're infants. I can go on and on if you want me to. They have lower test scores when they're in school. They show smaller increases in math scores over time as they move in and out of food security. This is not necessarily a stable thing, but oftentimes kids move in and out of having adequate sources of food. And they're oftentimes held back a year or two in school. And what we have to realize, this is not the child's fault. They didn't ask to be hungry. They didn't ask to live in poverty. This is the circumstance in which they find themselves. But too often, they are blamed for the circumstances in which they're being raised. And so what we have to do is we have to change our perceptions and change the way we think about childhood hunger and think about the families that these children are being raised in. So these are often circumstances in which there's a lot of shifting of adults moving in and out of the households. These are oftentimes families where they lose their job, where they've lost a job. Other people are moving in because they've lost jobs. Parents are feeling overwhelmed. Where's the next meal going to come from? Are they going to be able to pay their rent? They don't have any gas for their cars. How are they going to get transportation to go look for a job? How are they going to get transportation to buy food? And this is a very, very difficult kind of circumstance for many of these children to grow up in. So you have to think about this. This is their day in, day out kind of experience. So what we wanted to do in this evaluation, we're wrapping up the third year of the evaluation of the Backpack Program. We've been in 5 different counties, 16 different schools. We've interviewed 20 school personnel who were responsible for administering the program. We've now completed interviews with over 74 parents, 72 moms and 2 dads, who participate in the program. And we've looked at the impact of food insecurity on the daily lives of these families to better understand how program delivery and program administration can help these families in times of need. So I want to talk just a little bit about the teachers' perceptions of the program and how they administer the program, because I think it really addresses one of these issues about children who don't meet the qualifications for free and reduced lunch but don't have adequate sources of food. One of the beauties about the Backpack Program is that it is not determined by whether you, as an individual child, meet the requirements for free and reduced lunch. Each program is administered differently at each school. So teachers base their knowledge on the circumstances of the family or circumstances of the child. So if a parent has recently lost a job, then they know that that child may be eligible or in need of some food, and they're able to distribute the food to the child rather than having to meet a very, very strict criteria. And the teachers find that very, very beneficial. So we interviewed these teachers about how they identified the children, what they thought were beneficials about the program, and then also how it affected the schools themselves was kind of a surprise to us. The way that they talked about families who were experiencing hunger is that there were often families living within a family. There were multiple family members. There were grandmothers raising 8 or 9 children. That there would be blended families that come in together where they have 8 children from one family and 5 children from another family. So when we see these numbers about children living in poverty with 2 children in the household, 3 children in the household, many times these are families that have multiple families living together in one household and can shift from week to week. And when you think about when somebody comes into your house, you know, unannounced for dinner, you can think about ways that you might be able to scratch by and help, you know, kind of extend things. But when you got 12 or 13 people in your house, or even 5 or 6, and you don't have adequate sources of food, it can put a real strain on your budget. Many of the teachers talk about persistent poverty for many of these families, but also mobility. Many of these families have recently moved into the community, and they don't know how to get help, and they felt that the backpack program helped them. Homelessness, domestic violence also came up. They would also look to the physical characteristics of the children themselves to identify them. If they were skinny or had particularly dry skin, the word of mouth, sometimes the kids would volunteer themselves for the program, tell them that they were hungry. They would look at things like kids hoarding food in their desk, taking food off of another kid's tray in the cafeteria, and kids just saying that they'd like to be in the program. So basically what the teachers told us is that they felt that the program itself was very effective. They liked the fact that they could select the kids themselves and that their personal knowledge about these families was a real benefit. And that they felt that the way in which the food is distributed reduces the stigma. Some of the teachers and some of the social workers, whoever was administering the program, sometimes it's a secretary, in one case it was a principal, that they come up with their own ways to administer the program. One school said, you win the lottery, you know, you get the backpack. There's no bullseye on the back of the backpack. Sometimes it's just a sack that's stuck into your own backpack. And so kids don't feel that they're being singled out when they participate, and that there was some discrete distribution. The other part is that the way in which the food is prepared and distributed, and this is reinforced by the interviews that we've done with the families. This is kid-friendly food for the most part. It's attractive to children so that they're able to sort of prepare it and eat it themselves. And the teachers felt that it taught responsibility to the children. They had to make sure that they showed up for school on Friday. They had to take care of that pack in a responsible way and get it home, and that it was character building for many of these kids. And it reduced family burden. And we got this directly from the interviews we conducted with the parents. They really, really appreciated it. It helped out, particularly towards the end of the month for families that got benefits once a month, or towards the end of that 2-week period for families that were on a 2-week cycle. So one of the things that we found in these interviews is that for some of these families, this food was not only going to the children. this varied by the size of the families. So families that were relatively smaller, that were varied in size from 2 to 4 families, 2 to 4 people in the household, it was used sort of as part of the family meal, okay? So the soups, the fruit, the peanut butter would be incorporated into other dishes of the meal. But when you got to larger families, like families of like 5 to 7, then it was distributed among other children in the household, okay? So making sure, again, that the kids were eating and that everybody had something to eat. And then in the largest families, it was pretty much restricted to just the kid who got the backpack. And probably that was the kid who was the most in need. We see that it also, we found that the backpack program was reaching the neediest of those families. These teachers, the program administrators, they knew who to target, and that they had that the program is having a big effect on the family's budget, particularly those who are experiencing the most severe forms of food insecurity. So those that would go without eating a meal, a parent that would go without eating a meal during the day and give up food for their children, they are the ones that are seeing the biggest effect on their daily budget, versus those who have more less severe forms of food insecurity. The school, the teachers in the schools tell us that it created what they call an ethos of care, that everyone got behind the program, that it instilled sort of a moral attitude within the school, that they felt that it was their civic duty to be engaged in the program, and it had a very, very positive effect. And I think that some of the things that we have learned from doing this evaluation is that giving the flexibility to the teachers and to the program administrators to be able to pick out those cases that they knew were in the most need rather than having a strict criteria was a very, very big benefit. And that we really found that they were reaching those students, those families that were most in need, and that really that this is, although it is a program that is targeted to children, that childhood hunger is really a family issue, and that the whole family is experiencing this at any given time.
That was Barbara Fees with the University of Illinois Family Resiliency Center. Up next, we'll hear from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank's Andrea Rundell.
We are serving by leaps and bounds many, 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 many more people as we turn around each year, up to about 100,000, over 100,000 people as of 2009, which is our last really good data with the hunger study. But we're coming up with some more hunger study data this very next year. That's going to keep us all very busy. At the food bank, overwhelmingly, we are serving, children are about the biggest group of people that we are serving. Seniors are a very large group. People who are unemployed or underemployed. The average monthly income among all of our client households was just over $1,000 for a family of four when last we looked at that. Just over $1,000 for a family of four. And if you were looking at Larry's statistics, that's about closing in on 50% of the federal poverty level. So that isn't even that horribly low federal poverty level. It's half of that. That's what we call extreme poverty. 1 in 4 kids in Eastern Illinois are food insecure. So you'll notice, again, that's higher than that poverty level. That's because not everybody who's food insecure has that terribly low income. As several of our speakers pointed out, there are people who have incomes up to 185% or higher of the federal poverty level who are still experiencing food insecurity. And 1 in 3 of the food bank's clients is under 18 years of age. Right, so we know this is something we need to be dealing with. This is a concern that we have. Kids are disproportionately represented all across the board in having problems with hunger. So we have what we think of as our coordinated response to childhood hunger at this point, the Healthy Futures Initiative. Part of our Healthy Futures Initiative is our Food Mobile program. What we do is we get food out to hard-to-reach rural areas. We have a number of communities in our 14 counties where there just isn't any resource at all, no emergency food program to go to. And so what we do is we take the food to them. We load up a truck, take it out, and make sure that we're able to distribute it to people. And we found that, in fact, even more of the clients on our food mobiles are children than are actually people who are coming to our food pantries. So this has become a very important, a significant way for us to make sure we're getting to kids, because it's one of the ways that we still get out to the general population but hit kids at an even higher rate. But it's not one of the programs that we actually directly direct at children. The backpack program was the first program that we really put together to go after making sure we're hitting that target population of children. The target sites that we are working with right now, we are working with elementary schools that have 80 to 100% low-income rates. So 80 to 100% free and reduced income, free and reduced lunch rates in our 14 counties. Kind of hard to believe that we have that many out there, but we do. In fact, we have 25 sites right now that we're serving that way. And 950 to 1,000 children are currently weekly receiving that backpack full of food to go home on the weekend, and we are not meeting the need, even in the schools that we're in at this point. We're still expanding our way out to try and make sure we get there, but we're working on that. Last and most exciting, brand new. Here we are. So many of the lessons that Barb talked about from the backpack program, that being able to engage school staff and helping to identify kids in need and being able to make sure that we could get to those kids where they are, informed what we were trying to do with school pantries. So instead of having a backpack given to an elementary school kid, what we're doing is we're placing pantries on school campuses. Whereas elementary school kids are quite happy to be given a backpack full of food on the most part, their families might feel the stigma, but that's mitigated by the way we handle the program. The kids don't. High schoolers will not go for it. Right. High schoolers do not want anything to do with being identified by anybody as being poor and handed something. And so we have taken up a completely different approach to reach those kids, and it's putting a pantry on site at those schools and giving them the opportunity to access it on behalf of themselves and their families. And handing them that has made all the difference for being able to respect their dignity and their needs, their understanding of their own family's needs, and given them a great deal to be able to say, I'm doing this for my family, not I'm just being given something. And I'm not going to go on about it terribly. What I would like to do is ask Diane Hutchins to come up and talk about the Charleston High School pantry, because this is one of our pilot sites just this September. They're going to be serving up to 25 households each month, and the pilot year has been funded by United Way of Coles County. So, Diane?
I'm Diane Hutchins. I'm from Charleston High School. I am the principal there, have been for about 7 years, and I got a wish that came true this year when Andrea Rendell from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank contacted me about setting up a food pantry in my high school. And, you know, I was confused at first because I thought, what is she wanting to do? Am I going to have, you know, the whole community or senior citizens trooping through my school? I really didn't know what she wanted at first. But then when she explained to me, she's talking about my kids, boy, my eyes got wide and my heart started thumping fast, because I am passionate about my kids and I'm passionate about their learning. And I know they can't learn if their bellies aren't full, if they're not hydrated, and all those kinds of things. I know that because I've been in this business for 26 years. So I got this little wish come true. This dream came true for me when Andrea said, okay, let's get together. So we got together, and my secretary and I sat down with Andrea, and we started finding more information. And the more we found out, the more excited I became, because of a lot of the information we've heard tonight, one of the things that really excited me was the idea of teenagers having choice over the foods that they might be able to take home for their families. And I know, after working with teenagers, that's so important. I know that because if I don't give them choices when it comes to the classes they want to take, or even the consequences for behavior that might not be what it should be, if I don't offer them choice, I don't get buy-in, okay? So choice is important. One of the other things that is so important is that a program like this has to be discreet, because they don't want to be identified as having the problem of not having enough food in their family. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for any of us when we have a problem that we don't have control over, but that we wish we did have control over. You know, we talked earlier about it's easy to tell with younger children when they have a problem with hunger. They will sometimes even come up to their teachers and say, "I'm hungry," or "Can I have that cookie," or "whatever's left over," or "I didn't get to eat breakfast today." Teenagers don't do that. What do teenagers do? Sometimes they steal food. Sometimes when food's available, they hoard it. Lots of times they don't even step foot in the cafeteria. They find another place in the building to hide. Sometimes they keep themselves from making friends. And we notice it that way because we have a student that just never makes friends with anybody in the building. And we wonder what the problem is. And we find out eventually that that's part of the problem. They don't want their friends to know that their family's not like every other family. They don't make friends because they don't want people to know that they don't have food. We find out because we try to contact the parents about different things, and we have inaccurate contact information. And part of the reason why is because they move a lot. They move a lot for a lot of reasons, but when kids move a lot, when their family is very mobile, it's because they're homeless, because they have problems keeping a place to live, which also means there's probably a problem with food. Anyway, back to the food pantry. These are the ways we find out that kids are hungry. But now, we have a little bit of a solution, at least for 25 households, and we've started the food pantry, and I got to admit, we messed up when we started, Andrea. You know we did. You got a phone call today. But we messed up because we contacted all the kids that we thought qualified according to our definitions, and that's the other beautiful thing about this program. We don't have to have a paper where it says what's your family income, how many people are in the family, you know, do you wear plaid clothes, do you wear checkered clothes, do you wear stripes, whatever the form or the format is. We as teachers and administrators and people in the building make the decisions based on those other things that I talked about. We know who in our building is hungry by just knowing our kids. So that's the beauty of the program. We figure out who's hungry, and we make those decisions. Okay, so we talk to the different kids that we identified through a team of people we have in our building that meets every other week to talk about any kind of problem kids have. We got together about 3 weeks ago, and we said, okay, we got this program. We're all excited. And we told the teachers about it the first day of school, day before school started. Andrea came down and explained it to our staff, and they were very excited. In fact, she got a couple of donations right that day from people because they knew there was a need. So anyway, we got all excited. We interviewed kids. We got all the information. Somehow, somebody got the kids thinking that last Friday was the first day that we were going to distribute food, and they showed up for their food. Well, what could we do? I wasn't there for anybody to ask, so they opened the doors and they gave food out without all the, the administrivia in place about how do you do it and how do you mark it down or whatever. So we goofed up, but we'll get it all straight. It'll be okay. The good thing is kids got food to take home. You know, that's cool. That's cool. So we figure it doesn't make any difference that we messed up. If we have to find some extra money somewhere in our, you know, our little activity funds that we have, or if we have to go around the neighborhood and say, hey, we messed up, we need some extra money, that's okay. That's okay. We'll go buy some more food and we'll get it in there. Whatever we have to do is okay because we got those kids fed. And the other amazing thing was, you know, we worried about those things that we talked about kids being slow to start this program, because Andrea warned me. She said, you're so passionate about this. Don't be disappointed. Don't be disappointed, Diane, because at first it's going to start slowly and you're not going to get all these kids out there. Huh, Andrea, they all came. They were all there. They wanted their food. Some of them had parents with them. It was so exciting. I didn't get to see it, but from what I hear, it was really exciting. I mean, it must have been because I have to go get some more food to put back on the shelves. So I'm really glad that I got invited to be here tonight because I want to thank Andrea. I want to thank the Eastern Illinois Food Bank for making a little dream wish prayer of mine and of our schools come true, because we fed kids and families for at least a few days, a week, a month, however, but we fed some kids last Friday, last weekend, for how long? So thank you. It's a great thing.
Before the symposium wrapped up, the panelists were asked why there might be cases in which a child who qualifies for food assistance may not willingly participate. Here again is Don Malchiori with the Illinois Commission to End Hunger and the No Kid Hungry campaign, and Charleston High School principal Diane Hutchins.
With school breakfast, it's something that you've heard with everything. Stigma is a really big piece of that, and the stigma happens when you have breakfast in the cafeteria before school, because it becomes known as that's the poor kid's meal. And no child wants to self-identify themselves as the poor child. I mean, you know, in the first and second grade, you might get that, but as soon as you know, they kind of have that ration of where they fit in society, it's gone. They're not going to be there. The other thing is schedules. I know these are a lot of times chaotic families, and these are moving from home to home, don't have reliable transportation, get to school late. If they get to school at the bell and just squeeze in on time, there is no way to have breakfast. So really, I like to think of it as the reason kids aren't participating, it's an adult problem, because we haven't set up a system that allows children to eat when they're hungry.
I think it goes beyond that. Having been in the schools for 26 years, the paperwork even involved in getting your students signed up for free and reduced lunch program, for some families, that paperwork is insurmountable, just like filling out your taxes is insurmountable. It may seem easy for you and I to look at that form and say, oh, no problem, I can fill that out. But for some of them, it's difficult for them to fill out, number one. Number two, if their students are older, whether it's breakfast or lunch we're talking about, the kids themselves want nothing to do with it, whether it's breakfast or lunch. And to be real honest, without making any kind of political statement, the more and more federal guidelines that get put on the programs, and I know that we put those guidelines on in the interest of good, healthy meals, but the more that happens, the less kids want to participate as they get older, because they look at their friends going through the a la carte lines and getting the hamburgers and, you know, buying the a la carte items, and that they don't want to do that anymore. So they don't want to be signed up for it.
You have been listening to a broadcast of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank's 6th Annual Hunger Symposium. It was recorded on September 18th at Provena Covenant Medical Center in Urbana. That concludes our broadcast. Speakers included Barbara Fees with the University of Illinois Family Resiliency Center, Don Malchiori with the Illinois Commission to End Hunger and the No Kid Hungry campaign, Larry Joseph with Voices for Illinois Children, Andrea Rundell with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and Charleston High School principal Diane Hutchins. For additional information, visit willconnect.org. For Illinois Public Media, I'm Sean Powers. Have a wonderful holiday.